Extraordinary Golf with author Fred Shoemaker.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week you'll get inside information on how to lower your scores through strategy and course management. We'll ask course pros, designers, and architects to reveal their secrets in an effort to improve your game. If you're a beginner or a seasoned pro, subscribe to the Golf Smarter podcast. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Last episode, I promoted that we were going to play our interview with Michael Murphy, author of Golf in the Kingdom. But because much of this week's conversation talks about the past weekend's Open Championship, I decided to make the switch. Now, if all goes according to schedule, whatever that means, the Michael Murphy interview will be next and followed up by an interview with the founder of the Chivas Iron Society, which is based on the book Golf in the Kingdom. Hope I didn't screw you up in the move, but stick around to the end because I have some announcements regarding a new Golf Smarter product, a request for some help from you, and we're giving away 4 signed copies of Fred Shoemaker's books, Extraordinary Golf, The Art of the Possible, and Extraordinary Putting, Transforming the Whole Game. Now, on the cover of Extraordinary Golf, Michael Murphy is quoted as saying, quote, "I have never met a better teacher of golf's inner game. This book will become a classic," end quote. So what that means to you is that for the next few shows, we're going to focus on the inner game, the one that goes on in your head while you're on the course. And that aspect may have more impact on your scoring than club selection. Fred, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Fred.
This is going to get very funny with the two Freds going back.
Yes, I know.
and just to let our listeners know, both of us are married to a woman named Jo. So it's even stranger than it sounds.
Uh-huh.
You know, Fred, I got your books. Thank you for sending them over. And, you know, like a good reviewer, I was going to go ahead and do a quick skim over the books and get a sense of what they are. And so, you know, because you can't read everything that comes through. I started reading Extraordinary Golf. We're recording this on Monday. I started reading this on Thursday, and I read the entire thing. I could not put it down, and I didn't get a chance to get Extraordinary Putting started, which I'm absolutely going to do.
Yes.
So that's the first testimonial right there.
Well, way to go.
Thank you.
Glad it was interesting.
It was very interesting.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm sure that, like me, you grew up in an era where Saturday mornings, you turn on TV and watch cartoons all morning. And then you get older and you turn on Saturday morning TV, and similar to cartoons, there are infomercials for golf products.
Yes.
Every one of these golf products that are out there that I've seen makes golf more difficult.
Well, I think it comes from the basic point of view or context that there's something out there that if you had, it would make you better. And anything, that's what TV runs on, something that somehow you're lacking. So how about if we started out with this, that products don't work, tips don't work, you work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you're going to have, it does, because I just finished reading the book. You're going to have to help us out on that. What do you mean?
Well, oftentimes a person gets a gizmo, and they put the gizmo on, and then for a brief period of time, they play wonderfully. They think the magic is in the gizmo. But for a brief period of time, they might actually experience something in themselves. That, however, when they think they take off the gizmo, like the magic goes away. And it's like buying a new driver. People say, the moment you put your money down, it turns on you. Practicing with it was fine, but you see, when you buy a new club, for a brief period of time, you're actually really attentive to the club itself. And you really feel the club and experience the club. And that kind of awareness and that kind of being present to the subtleties of the feel itself has the club work. You work. So, and it's the same with a lot of golf stuff. You don't need to possess the stuff. It actually shows you how amazing your body is when you use some feel and awareness and being present to it. So a lot of times people will do an exercise at a golf school we have. They say, you know, that exercise really works. And we just have to sometimes remind them, you work. I mean, this body's gone through a million years of evolution. It has awarenesses and sensitivities and, you know, many things of which we don't even know. And when it actually does what it can do, it seems amazing to us. So my suggestion is, people, is don't put your hope in the gizmo. Have it be in your own body, which is quite more amazing than anything you'll buy. That probably sounds pretty strange.
Well, yeah, of course. When you get past it, and it's not a simple thing to get past, but once you do get past it, when you work on it, it makes a lot of sense. And so it's not just extraordinary golf we're talking about, it's extraordinary golf that we're talking about, correct?
Yeah, I think that's what most people want. People say, I want to be consistent. But if you were really consistent, shooting the same golf the same way every time, you'd be bored as anything.
Yeah, let's work on that a bit, because I love that. That was towards the end of the book, and I was finally going, yes! And I even isolated a page here because of that. And just talking about consistency, because that's the one thing that I would ask of myself is consistency. But the way you describe it, maybe I don't.
Well, people say consistency is golf heaven. It could be golf hell.
Tell me why.
Doing the same thing every day. Trying to hit the same shot every day. My experience, what people really want is creativity, continued learning, curiosity, something that wakes life up, not be at the same old thing all the time. See, people call it even a pre-shot routine. Like if you can do the same thing every time before you go to hit a shot. How about a pre-shot creation, in which every time it's fresh and you're creating in that moment, it's different than just a routine. Routines put people asleep.
Are you an advocate of a pre-shot routine, though?
Not at all.
You're not?
No. I'm an advocate of a pre-shot creation. And I know that sounds really weird, but it's like I've filmed hundreds and hundreds of people doing their pre-shot. And then we ask them to do something really, let's suppose this. Suppose I asked you to walk up to a certain spot about 10 feet in front of you and take a golf club and throw it out there. But as you did it, I'd like you to throw the club about 10 feet high and twirl it so the head twirls from right to left in the air. It's okay. Can you imagine that at least?
I'm doing that, yeah.
Okay, good. So you walk up and I film that. And let's say it takes about 8 seconds for you to throw the club. Then I say, okay, now what I'd like you to do is we're going to pick a target and I want you to hit a golf shot to it. And I will have you walk up and do everything the same. You walk up and hit your normal golf shot. And instead of taking 8 seconds, it takes 20 seconds. Most people in their pre-shot routine go deeply internal to remember something. And I would ask you, well, what's the other 12 seconds? What are you doing? So if you take something that somebody is really creating and trusting themselves, I'll call that a pre-shot. If you take something that someone is walking up trying to remember what to do, I call that trying to do a routine. Can you see one puts you in the present, creating as you walk up, and one puts you in the past, attempting to remember? By the very nature of the word routine, routine can only come out of the past. By the foundation of that word. So I don't ever coach a pre-shot routine. I have no interest in it. But I am very interested that a person wakes up and creates something in front of them and steps in and lets it go.
I'm looking in your the source of consistency chapter of the book where it says your new definition for consistency is fairly similar scores produced by fairly similar shots with fairly regular improvement.
Yeah. Okay, well, how about consistency? If you ever watched in nature that animals seem to be continually developing in what they do. There's no uncoordinated squirrels. If I look out my window here, I don't see squirrels toppling out of trees or birds flying into one another. They have an amazing capacity to keep developing as they grow, as they live longer. So I would call that a form of developing, in which consistency is a person is always growing in their capacity to perform. So I think more of that would be more interesting than just simply being consistent, kind of the same thing each time.
Interesting. And when you talk about it focusing on the past as opposed to focusing on the future, and I think I've told this story more than once of the guy that I played with who, as we walked up to the tee box and there was a body of water in front of us, he said, "I hit the ball in here every single time."
Yes. That's probably where he was with his attention right then.
Exactly.
Yep. So if I asked you, why do you get upset if you miss hit a shot, what would you say?
Because I didn't want to do that.
Okay, got it. Now, let's suppose, is it possible, I'd like you to just consider, is it possible that you don't get upset for that reason?
Yes.
Okay, so let's play it out. I mean, if it's possible, we can play that. Let's suppose that you walk up on that hole and you hit the ball in the water. Got that?
Uh-huh.
But you know thereafter, this will be the most magnificent day of your life in golf. Okay, you got those two scenarios. You know both of those. You're going to walk up and hit it in the water, and after that, you'll have the most magnificent day of your life. Got that?
Yeah.
Would you be upset if you hit it in the water?
No.
So you're
it's saying, out of the way.
But you're saying that the act that has normally upset you, hitting it in the water, does not upset you in this case. Don't you find that interesting?
It sounds relieving.
Well, it's only different because you have a different future. See, I say people get upset only for one reason, and that's because they think they're going to do it again.
Different future than what? How do we know what our future is?
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, the fellow who walks up to say, "I always hit the ball in here," he's taken the past and put it in the future.
There's no hope.
So you're saying we don't know what our future is. I say that's absolutely true. There is a predictable future, but the future is, the truth is, there's nothing out in the future. It's open. It's full of possibilities. And only when you take the past and you put it in the future do I see people get dispirited and upset. See, it is possible to walk up to that shot and have the guy say, "You know, I always hit it in here." Then he catches himself and said, "You know what? It's possible that I could hit the ball over this time." Can you see that moment he starts to create a different future?
Yeah.
See, I say that people, well, the way a person walks up to a golf ball has nothing to do with their past. Nothing. It has everything to do with their relationship to the future. The future is either possible or predictable. It's possible if you create a future. It's predictable if you put the past in the future. And most of the golf lives I see are simply people who are putting the past in the future and then reliving it, putting that past in the future and then reliving it. And it gets upsetting to people. And you can hear it in the way they speak. But the most courageous act I have ever seen in the game of golf, I mean, ever, it isn't Tiger Woods hitting a 2-iron into a British Open. That's outside the realm of which we're talking. The most courageous scene or act is someone takes the past, which they have put in the future, and put it back in the past. Oh, that's in the past. Let's create a new possibility. I've just mishit 3 shots in a row. That's in the past. Now what's possible? See, if you look and observe creative people, they live out of a different realm generally than you and I most of the time. Creative people come into a situation, let's say that all of a sudden it's 110 degrees today, okay? Creative people don't look that it's 110 degrees and it's wrong that it's 110 degrees. There's something that shouldn't be this way. It should be better. Creative people come up to 110 degrees, say it's 110. Now what's possible? I've just hit 2 balls out of bounds. Now what's possible? Thomas Edison, I found 1,000 ways not to produce a light bulb. Now what's possible? They live in a possibility, an open future, and most people have shut down that possibility. So, when you're in a golf lesson with someone, if they are simply reliving the past, there's nothing you can do. So the person lets it be in the past, and creates something else. I know that sounds like a lot of verbiage and semantics, but it actually makes the greatest difference in golf of anything I've ever seen.
How did you get there?
There, meaning?
To this point, to this kind of understanding. Was this on the golf course you were able to find this?
Well, yeah. It's a golf lesson. I've given over 41,000 golf lessons. If you see a person walk up dragging their past, a lady walks up and says, I'm non-athletic. I got picked last of the kickball team when I was 6 years old, and all my life I've realized I'm just terrible in sports. So here I am at this golf lesson. Do you realize she's basically says, there's no possibility with me. I suck. And given my past history, there's nothing that no one can make a difference. Nothing and no one. So there's no point in doing a lesson. Until she's willing to let that go and see what's possible.
Even if a person doesn't have a decent hand-eye coordination.
Well, it's amazing this. Now, let's take this lady in a lesson. I'll say, here, I toss her a golf ball, and it'll bounce off her heel, and at the heel of her hand, and go on the ground, or I'll say, I can't catch anything, and she'll try, she'll stab at it. Now, and then you say to her, are your eyes okay? She goes, yeah, my eyes are fine. And then said, I want you to simply tell me, as I toss you this ball, you don't have to catch it, I want you to simply tell me, is the ball spinning towards you, that way, or is it spinning backwards towards me? Have this scenario so far?
Mm-hmm.
I've done this with hundreds of people, and usually sometimes in front of large groups. So I toss the lady a ball, and she'll watch it in the air, spinning, and she'll catch it, and she'll say, well, it was spinning towards me. And I'll toss her another one. She'll say, well, that one's spinning towards you, and I'll toss her one to her forehand side a couple feet away. And she'll catch it and say, well, that was spinning towards me. Now, and people who watch this are stunned by the fact the lady who called herself uncoordinated in that moment shows grace and coordination. You see, she didn't ever see a golf ball being tossed at her before. She saw a threat that has been there since her childhood, and she responds to it beautifully as a threat. Now, once she gets present and actually sees a golf ball and lets go of this story she has, anybody can do amazing things. I mean, this literally has gone through a lot of evolution to be able to catch things. And you'd be amazed, even the most uncoordinated people can exhibit coordination within a minute. Eye-hand coordination. You see, the context in which we hold things creates the context in which we act. Well, it's like this. I know for people who are going to be listening to this, they'll be kind of have their head swirling at this point, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with being able to be called to think a little bit. It's not easy. So we're not after maybe to repeat the things that people already know. It's like this. When people step on the first tee and they turn outward and look there, most people don't experience a golf course. They experience a threat. They experience the OB is threatening, the trees is threatening, the traps is threatening, the fairway reasonably safe, and the other side is the right-hand side also threatening.
Let's not forget the weather.
Weather,
the terrain.
Wind, and also people coming up behind you, two foursomes waiting for you to tee off.
And all the clubs you have to choose from. I mean, all these things are elements that prevent me from betting on golf.
Well, great. Now, so the deal is, if you experience it as a threat, you will swing as threatened. So the game now, do you hit out of bounds because you came over the top? Or do you hit it out of bounds because as you look out, you experience doubt and fear? The doubt and fear tightens your arms and forearms. And at the top of the swing, the tightening of the arms and forearms sends them out of sequence, so the ball goes out of bounds. Now, is the problem that you came over the top, or is the problem is that you had doubt when you looked out at the golf course? So, see, I like to at least win a golf lesson to get to the issue of it, and the issue is, can you create the golf course as safe rather than as a threat? And you'll swing a different way. So can the golf course be all safe, the OB be safe, the rough be safe, the trees be safe? I mean, safe like, you realize nothing out there is going to hurt you. I mean, you know, there's no physical danger. But if you've created it as a threat, it's possible to recreate it as safety. And until that happens, I don't see swings change. Even if you work on the driving range, people still do the same jerky, quick move on the first tee. So as you view the world, so you will act in the world. So do you try to change the actions, or do you try to change the way you view the world? I work with the second one. More interesting, I think.
Far more interesting, but does that... I mean, you've obviously have taught a lot of people that you've mentioned, and you give golf schools and lessons and things. Do people feel that they have a takeaway from your course?
Oh, sure. Well, we do a golf schools, and we fill them at 87% rate for 16 years, and we have no advertising budget. Zero. No one's ever seen us in print anywhere in terms of advertising or media or anything. So it's all word of mouth. So if there wasn't a takeaway, we'd be out of business. So what is the takeaway? I mean, one of the things is that the foundation of the program is very simple. It's that people's awareness is developmental. Not what we say, not all the information, not understanding, but the simple act of awareness that's being present to what's actually happening now, both in your golf swing and in the internal landscape of what's happening in your mind. And as a person grows and develops their awareness of those two areas, the handicap goes down. It's the only one-to-one ratio I've ever seen. Increase awareness, decrease in handicap. And I don't care how much people know and understand and information they have. I'm saying that information does not lower a handicap. Awareness does. People are amazing when they can actually experience what's going on. Fred, what's your handicap about?
About a 13.
Okay. So if it's a 13, here's my guess. That you swing the club up in the air, not really fully sure where the club face is, or maybe even the where the head of the club face points, and then you come down and hit a ball, and then you make up a story about what happened, generally, but not really experiencing the club face itself. Is that true, or is that inaccurate?
As far as not experiencing the club face, absolutely. Making up stories, a way of life.
We all do. It's great. So now here's the coolest thing. You go to a golf lesson, and someone says to you, you know, Fred, your club face is slightly shut at the top. You can see it on video. What we'd like you to do, we now like you to change your grip or change the way you rotate it going back so your club face is no longer shut. Now, I want you to see the complete insanity of that. You're attempting to fix something that you have never experienced. And I don't have many things that I know as conclusions, but here's one of them. One of them is that it will go back to where it was soon after the lesson because you didn't experience where it was.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm saying it may not be the wisest thing to have people fix things that they don't experience. The first thing is to have them experience it. And the club face at the top of the swing is actually crucial to where the starting line and where the ball curves. And how do you have a person experience something they've never experienced before? Have it be safe. Safe that their ego isn't on the line with every shot. Safe that the coach is not judging and assessing them. So we promise people in the beginning of a golf school only one thing. We promise them to create an environment. The coaches are intentional about creating an environment that is without judgment or evaluation. It's an environment for deep and rapid and fast learning. And the only learning I've ever seen take place that really is complete, so to speak, takes place in an environment without evaluation or judgment. With an intention that the person recreate that environment when they leave the golf school for themselves. So, it's kind of a complex answer to...
I know that the only time I've ever experienced putting a draw on the ball is when I was in a lesson.
Yes.
But the next day on the driving range, disappears.
So I think that's maybe one of the things that lessons could improve on, is that if you can't coach yourself, then a lesson's a failure. And I don't care how well you hit it in front of the pro. So it has something to do with I would much rather have a person hit the ball poorly in a lesson, but develop and grow their awareness, than hit the ball fantastic in a lesson without an awareness development. So when you walk away from a lesson, couldn't draw it, it probably meant that you weren't aware of the face of the club at crucial points during the swing. It was just a blur. And then you tried to remember the information from the lesson, turn it over through the ball, point more to the right at setup, have a stronger grip, all those things. And it didn't make a difference because the critical variable was something that never hit your awareness.
Right on. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
As we make the turn, we want you to know that we're taking requests. If you'd like us to feature a specific course on Golf Smarter, our email address is golfsmarter@ttour.com. That's golfsmarter, one word, @TEETOUR.com. Whether you're planning a golf vacation, playing in an upcoming tournament, or have a favorite course for which you have a question, please let us know and we'll do a show just for you. Again, here's your host for Golf Smarter, Fred Green.
We're back with Fred Shoemaker, author of Extraordinary Golf and the latest one, Extraordinary Putting, which I want to get into just a bit, although I have to start reading it. We'll cover it today. I want to get a little bit more into awareness. I've noticed personally that the times that I focus on just that shot and nothing more, not the score for the hole, not the score for the round, not what I did on my last shot, but when I'm focused on just where I am at that moment, I play my best golf.
Well, that's what they're teaching at the highest level of the game, highest level. Do you realize that guys are playing the tour exactly what you just said? The capacity to be present in this moment, right now. Most people, when they play in practice, are not here. You walk down the fairway usually thinking, well, I'm 3 over par. If I could par the next two, then I could turn the 9 and 41. That would be good for me, but the back 9, and that sort of story. Or, I've just mishit a couple of shots, I've got to remember what I did on the range. There's something about being in this moment that I've seen. The only greatness in sports performances that I've really seen or been part of or had a chance to interview people about, they said pretty much this. It was simple and effortless. It's like time disappeared. I was so present, and I loved it. Did the same thing all the time.
But how do we get there? I mean, everyone's got, you know, golf is a distraction from life.
Well, you can't get there. You can only be here. You don't go to first grade and develop yourself to be present and let go of this crazy conversation in your head.
Right.
You don't have in second grade learning how to contain energy in your body and learning how to trust yourself. These are stuff we're supposed to all of a sudden have by accident. The being present is the single most powerful tool in sports, period. The only time learning can happen is now, in anything, now. And if you're not here at this moment in golf, you probably won't learn. But suppose you go to hit a bucket of balls. There's 60 balls in a bucket, let's say. A bucket takes 120, it takes 120 seconds to hit those 60 balls. So in your hour of being there, you have about 120 seconds to experience a golf swing. Now, if I'm saying the only time you can learn is now, and if you're not present in that moment of swinging, you won't learn anything. You'll just simply have some of the same thoughts you had the day before. Now, are you ready to mess around with a real weird conversation?
Okay.
Okay, here we go. When's the future?
when is... Well, we're in, no, it's now... the future is never...
Yeah, but when do you know the future? When's the only moment you can create the future?
I have no idea.
Well, take a look.
At what?
Think about the future. When can you create it?
In your mind.
But when's the only time when? At that... When did you just do that?
Now.
There you go.
Oh.
No, so okay. One possibility of locating yourself in the world is I can think about the future now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when's the past?
Now?
Got it. So, I can also think about the past now. So the present is called what's happening outside of those thoughts. It actually is now. So the only place that you could locate yourself, the word locate yourself is probably confusing, but I don't know how else to say it, is you can be in a conversation about the future now, you can be in the conversation about the past now, or you can be in the present, which is happening outside of those conversations. Now, it all happens now. The only thing that's ever here is now. But now you can be thinking about the future, now you've been thinking about the past, or now you can actually be present to your senses. So I'm saying that when most people are practicing, they are in those two conversations, past or future, and you can't learn there.
How do you maintain being in the present for the second and a half that it takes to swing a golf club?
Watch yourself when you go into the future and past. Catch yourself. It's the act of catching yourself when you notice you go away and bring yourself back. Like I'm holding a pen in my right hand now. I can actually experience it in between my fingers. See, that kind of practice, being here. You know, I was just working with a guy who won $3 million in the tour last year, okay?
Yep.
European tour. Here's all he says. He said, I'm a guy who made the winning putt in the Ryder Cup at the Belfry. I said, okay, terrific. And he says, I want to tell you about that experience. He says, I remember walking down the fairway and I'm thinking, he goes into the future. He says, there are over 200 million people watching me on television. Might even be more than that now. And he said, I couldn't go there. It was too big. It got me too crazy. He said, all I could focus on was watching the ground about 6 feet in front of my feet and feeling my feet in the ground. He said, I had about a 10-foot putt. He's playing Jim Furyk. And he says, I got about a 10-footer that breaks a little left to right. I step over the putt after I've lined it up, and I look out, and I see the spot over which my ball wants to roll. He says, I look down at the ball, I look at the spot, and I feel the putter in my hand. I putt it, and I felt the solid hit, and I swiveled my head slightly to the left, and I saw the ball rolling towards the spot. I see it hit the spot, and I say to myself, wow, it hit my spot. And then it falls into the hole, and I know he doesn't remember a thing after that. He's jumping around the green and everything. And he comes and he says this. He said, I've never been more present in my life than I was in that last putt. But this is the kicker, the greatest part. He said, I've just played in the AT&T. He said, it's a three-round cut. He said, I've just shot 221 for three rounds. I've missed the cut. And he said, even on the 17th hole at Spyglass, even when I know I've missed the cut, I have a four-footer and I'm afraid. He says, I was afraid for 221 shots. He says, how can a guy who is so present during the Ryder Cup, when everything matters, be so fearful when just another golf tournament comes by for 221 shots? He says, how can that happen? And that's what he's asking. It's a fascinating story.
Very interesting.
See, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go through, you know, I said, I don't know, but let's talk about it. So how do you develop yourself as a person who grows more and more of the capacity to be present and catch yourself more when you go into away into the past and future? I mean, that's what he worked on the whole next year after that. See, great players don't necessarily go into the future or past. They just catch themselves more quickly and come back more quickly. When you watch amateurs sometimes, they can be in this whole story about the future for two holes. You know, going on about what people think and what will happen and this and what would happen, you know. Rarely catching themselves. So that's a great capacity to notice where your attention goes and to bring it back to where you are, your desire is. You know, the one thing that demarks a human being is a being who can have some measure of say-so over where their attention goes. We are not just a machine. You know, even if you go by an accident or by the side of the road that the police are there, you don't have to stop and look. You can actually go by without, you know, just wish them well and on you go. So we are not a machine. We do have choice about the matter. But it's noticing where our attention goes and the capacity to bring it back that's a mark of a greatness in this game.
It's interesting because as we're talking, I'm experiencing moments in golf in my mind, especially in putting, where I've made a putt that I was very excited that I was able to sink that whatever distance it'd be, 10 feet or 30 feet or even longer. But I remember that moment as if when I was lining up the putt, as if there was a line drawn from the cup to my ball, and I was able to see it as if someone had marked it for me with a, you know, with white chalk. And all I had to do was just feel it go in, and it ended up going in, as if I saw the ball the whole time before I even made the putt.
So it's like this. Is this accurate? You saw a possible future and simply got over the ball and were present, hitting it along with the line that the future had given you. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now, how can you create that when you want?
Mm-hmm.
Not just
I'm asking you that question, Fred.
Yeah, this is not easy conversations. You know, sometimes without a run-up, they seem kind of like silly to people. But I practice, and I went out this morning, and I practiced from 6 a.m. to 7:15. I practice doing nothing when I practice. I simply step up, be present, and let go of any thought that might come in that tells me how to do something. And I simply observe what's there, feeling in my body, seeing a line to a target, over and over and over. The moment I work on stuff or try to remember stuff, that kind of, when you saw that line, there was a certain kind of knowing, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of knowing can't come out of a formula. It can't come out of a remembered tip. It happens when there's like an emptiness that allows it to show up. So, you see, every once in a while, you'll know where a putt is going before you see it,
mm-hmm.
before you hit it.
It's rare, but boy, is it exciting when it happens.
Now, most people know where a ball's going to go when they look at it after they've hit it. Let's say they look at it in the sky. Oh, that's sliced because I can see it sliced. Okay? Professionals know absolute certainty where the ball is going at impact. Okay? So far?
Yep.
I can feel where it's going when the moment I touch it. If I can't feel it, you're not a golf professional. Now, there comes a time when you can let go of this remembering and being in your head and non-presence, when you can actually know where a ball is going to go on the downswing. That's what I was experiencing today. As the club started down, I knew with certainty where the ball would go. It's knowing, but it's backing up earlier and earlier the source of when you know. Now, there are times that I experience knowing where a ball's going when I'm setting up to it. There are more times now than there were because of the practice I'm doing, knowing with certainty where the ball is going. Now, I can't tell you how I know, but just like you knew, you just knew. And I noticed for me, I can never have that form of openness or I'm not sure what it is, sensitivity, when I start to think about what to do and how to do it. You know, make sure the club goes back toe up and bring it down and whatever. No magic comes from that. No extraordinary development. But you can see, if you let go of the swing tips and let go of the formulas, it's like being on a trapeze without a net. It's scary for people. I've always known what I'm going to do because I tell myself to do it. But when you finally let go of that for a period of time, there is a whole other mechanism that kicks in golf. It's an amazing capacity that the body has. And this sense of knowing comes out more and more. It's really amazing, actually. So as a possible future that you see, letting go of your attachment to the future, simply being present to what's there, and yet knowing where it's going to go. I don't know, it seems like a game worth playing to me. I'm very fascinated with that. But you're not going to get it out of telling yourself, make sure you twist your hips through or something.
Okay.
There's a very predictable result. What's absolutely predictable in golf, by statistics, unless you practice somehow considered out of the box or out of the normal realm, your handicap will drop for the first 5 to 7 years. Everybody does if they play. I mean, it's just, okay? Then after about 7 years, it will level off within a certain realm, going up and down within that realm, for most of the rest of your golf life, until your body has a first major stuff go on. Then your handicap will slightly rise, and then you'll die. So what would it be like to have something that's unpredictable? You know, unusual.
But golf is totally unpredictable.
But now, no, it's not. It's totally predictable. Completely. I mean,
but guys play the same course. These country club guys who play the same course twice a week, every week, but the ball never ends in the same place each time.
But they, who they are, is totally predictable.
Okay.
Who they are, how they step up to a shot. I mean, most people step up to a shot, aim it down the middle, and hope to God they hit it straight.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a more less developmental way to play golf than that. Have you ever, Fred, have you ever stepped on a driving range just once in your life and said, my purpose today has nothing to do with doing the right swing or hitting it straight. I'm going to experience the face of this club. I'm going to see how many yards I can curve it left. I'm going to see how many yards I can curve it right. I'm going to see how low I can hit this thing and how high I can hit this thing. If this is a paintbrush, I want to paint the sky in a lot of different directions and find out with nothing more than sheer curiosity what this thing can do. I don't want to be right. I don't want to be good. I want to just play. That would be a miracle.
Yes, it would.
But mostly people are saying, I'm working on my swing. And whenever I get my swing down, then I'll do that other creative, unusual stuff. It never gets down, by the way. You only have the capacity to hit a ball reasonably straight when you can curve a ball left and right at will, hit it high and low at will, and then straight is a little bit more of a choice rather than a hope. What you're saying about most people at the country club, and I know us, I mean, I've been around thousands and thousands and thousands of golfers. It's mostly a game about survival, game about having your ego staying intact, trying to do it right, trying to be good, trying to hit it straight, and working on your swing. That is totally predictable. You know, we got 27 million golfers in this country, and a lot of them are doing exactly that. What would be unusual if someone says at the first tee and said, you know what, today, just for me, I'm going for freedom. I'm going for creativity. Now, I'm going to have my body let this go no matter what. And if the pin is back left, I'm going to hit a low draw in there. And the pin is front right, I'm going to hit a high fade. I'm going to shape the golf course the way that it was intended to. I'm going to have the architect call forth shots for me. I'm not going to hit the shot I should hit, but I'm going to hit the shot that turns me on. Now that would be unusual.
Yes.
You okay?
I'm trying my best to absorb this stuff, and some of it I'm like going, what?
Yeah, good.
But I definitely am going to bring it with me the next time I go out and practice.
Yeah, well, you won't be able to bring it all. But
no, of course not.
Something. I mean, are we simply machines who step up, please God, let me hit it straight and try to hit it straight, and then berate ourselves and we don't go to remembering a formula of what we didn't happen and try to correct in the next shot?
Mm-hmm.
No, or are we have this capacity to commit, to create, to have our intentions, you know, be stronger than our addiction for having it work out. So, the British Open just finished a little while back, and watching Tiger Woods play that last 9 holes is like watching a consummate artist, an amazing array of shots that he hit.
Wasn't that entertaining?
Well, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
The most creative. You know, I mean, a friend of mine was walking the Masters, and he walks with Hank Haney, who was following Tiger.
Oh, my gosh.
And Haney's talking about stuff, and he says, you know, what makes Tiger great? And he says, there are only two players like this in the world today. It's he and Phil Mickelson. And he says, Tiger's ahead of Mickelson at this point. But he says, the creativity that they have from 30 yards in is astounding. The things that Tiger can do with a golf ball, even in that short range. He says, you know, people like Ernie Els are wonderful and great and all that, but they have kind of a mechanics view to a short game.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that what kind of beat Ernie up? Was the fact that his short game kind of backfired on him?
Well, everybody has. They have kind of your basic shots, and they're very, very, very good at them. But the subtlety of what Tiger can do, simply because he plays, he messes around. Here's a guy who's so in love with learning that he'll keep altering his swing if he sees something as developmental, whereas almost every critic of the game will blast him for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so scared about holding on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't try something new. You were so good before. And now, of course, they're all saying a different tune. But it's so amazing that here's a guy who says, I know who I am. I'm a guy that loves learning. I remember when he practiced with Annika Sorenstam. Annika was just completely blown away and amazed at what he could do. It was almost too much for her to absorb. She had to take what she could. But what that man can do, and even though obviously if he can do it in a short game, he's hitting all these shots into the British Open. It was just incredible. But he has I think whatever his background and however his family was with him, it's safe for him to explore and to create newly. Where for most of us, people hit a couple of shots in the driving range, curving, then they say, oh, make sure I hit up straight now. So how can you create the world such that you can keep exploring and keep discovering and keep being on the edge without reining it in and trying to make sure that you look good for other people? I mean, how would people play if they didn't have the question, what would others think of me? How much freedom would they play with? I think a lot more. If you walk up to a hole, the way that you see the hole will be the way that you swing.
Yeah.
So, see, one of the basic tenets, I don't work on people's actions. I work in the point of view that gives the action.
And that's what makes extraordinary golf.
I would say if there anything is different, that would be it. I mean, let's play a little game. You ready?
Okay.
You're 75 yards from the hole. What's the target?
Well, the ultimate target would be the hole.
Okay, so that's your target.
Okay.
That's true. Is that true for you?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Now play this out in real time, okay? Now you imagine you're standing up over a ball.
Mm-hmm.
You swing it to the top. I want you to picture yourself at the top of the swing.
Okay.
Okay, you're at the top of the swing starting down. You ready?
Yes.
What's your target?
The ball.
Now, you say that like it's okay, just the ball. Do you realize what a stunning paradigm shift you just went in? Most people don't realize in the middle of a crucial action, they change target. And as the target changes, once the ball becomes the target, the downswing will be quick, usually coming slightly over the top, and your body will go into a stall manner and all that kind of stuff. See, a professional is someone who's connected to a target throughout the motion and the target that they chose. An amateur is someone who knows what the target is, generally, but in the middle of a swing, all of a sudden something else comes up, like make sure you hit that, survive. The ball is a target. But very few people will ever say, you know what? In the middle of a swing, I change targets. We work with a lot of businesses using golf as a developmental tool. And people get in the saying, and you ask them, what's the target? Oh, the vision statement's the target. The mission of the company. We're all behind and rowing in the same direction. Okay? Then they get in a boardroom, and you watch them change targets all the time. It's about being right. It's about dominating people. It's about giving a pretense that they have the answers. It's not about empowerment and for the vision. And very few people recognize in the moment that they change targets, that they change targets.
So the ball is not the target?
Well, didn't you just tell me the target was the pin?
When I'm setting up.
Well, why would it be different?
Because I got to hit the ball.
Well, let's suppose this. A pitcher is throwing a ball, correct?
Yes.
Coming out of their hand.
Yes.
What's the target for the pitcher?
The glove, the catcher's glove.
Wouldn't he say, well, I have to let go of the ball?
Yeah, but he's not looking at the ball. He's looking at the target. He's looking at the catcher's glove the entire time. When I hit the ball, I'm looking at the ball. I'm not looking. You don't want me to be setting up over the ball looking at the flag.
No, I have a job because people look at the ball. That's why I have a job. The target is not the ball. See, it's possible to be connected to something that you're not looking at. See, any sport that a person looks at the object of propulsion, we have millions of coaches, or at least thousands of them. There are more coaches in golf than any other, or teachers in golf than any other sport in history. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The second most is tennis, which people look more at the object than more sports.
Well, those are large participatory sports.
Yes, those are true.
That are life sports.
But you don't have a lot of people coaching fishing. You have very few people coaching running, which is just as participatory. If you took the top 10 sports, the ones with the dominant coaches are ones that people who are looking at the object. It's not that they're looking at it. It's they make it a target. What would happen if you were still connected as a target throughout that motion? I could promise you that your technique would change. Anyway, food for thought. I mean,
you didn't really say fool for thought, did you?
Did I say someone? We all are fools for thought, aren't we? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Okay, so Extraordinary Golf came out about 1996.
Yeah.
And now you have Extraordinary Putting.
Yes.
Is it basically the same concept that you're working on here?
Well, I wanted to go into putting because you get a lot of stories of golfer, I'm not strong enough and I'm not can't hit it that far, and all these stories that come up, right? This is I cannot because some reason. But anybody can putt. I mean, anyone. It takes no strength. And so, suppose that putting...
Well, it's also the easiest club to hit, correct?
But, well, not really. If you really watch putting, people hit putting as much off-center or as consistently off-center as they do every other club. They just don't notice it. I mean, putting, is most people say, it's kind of boring and not very ego-satisfying for them. Full swing is a big thing.
Really? I love putting.
Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. But suppose putting could reveal... your relationship to failure, learning how to trust your body, learning how to learn, could distinguish the depth of your own awareness, how to handle self-doubt, discovering how to produce peace of mind and freedom, learning how to coach yourself in putting, but it would be directly transferable to any part of the game. So it would be fun to take one area and explore it in a depth in such a way that can make a difference in anything. By and large, putting's fine. It's an interesting subject. But the way that people do putting is the way they do chipping, is the way they do full swings. And if you want to take it out to, I mean, this is California, we can take it out ridiculously, is that the way we do putting is the way we are with our family. It's the way we are in business. I mean, it's still us. Golf isn't metaphorical at all. But golf is a metaphor for the game. You've heard people say, but suppose it's not metaphorical at all, because it's really you. Not a metaphor, it's a real practical crucible in which to look at how you are. It makes it more interesting that way.
I found one of the interesting comments that was made during the Open Championship was that one of the commentators said that Sergio was searching for his putting stroke where Tiger had total command of it.
Well, sounds like a question of trust.
Right.
You wouldn't search for something you trusted.
Right.
And when they say Tiger has total command, it's a story that people make up for someone who's just present. Searching means I am not present, and I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Total command. I mean, see, confidence is something someone makes up about someone. You can't buy confidence. You can't, you know, it's a story. Oh, that person's confident. No, they're just simply present. Presence gives the illusion of confidence and of trust to other people. And, you know, when you listen to TV, I mean, I mostly have the sound turned down. When you listen to it, it's also the illusion. The commentators are usually commentating on the action itself. But mostly what you'll find is they're simply commentating on their own past. And projecting on people there.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends was playing in the World Match Play Finals. And so he plays this, and he was beaten by Michael Campbell, 2-1. And then he comes back and he watches the tape afterwards of the commentators speaking about him playing the tournament. And he says it was like watching a fantasy world, what they were talking about. Nothing to do with what was going on with him. They were making up dramas and, oh, this is a tough side he'll lie. He can't let this one get away from him. Paul said, it was just your basic 7-iron. I can hit on the green 98 out of 100. So, remember, the purpose of a golf tournament for television could be to simply sell the products between the event. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on. So, the commentators have to create a storyline that gets grown-up men and women like you and I to sit in front of a plastic box for 4 hours on a Sunday. Not that I didn't enjoy it. I loved the golf tournament.
Well, even though professional wrestling calls themselves sports entertainment, when you put any sport on television, it's sports entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, the only difference, or the major difference between TV and not TV, is the announcers. And
well,
so that's why wrestling doesn't work when you go there live, because the announcers on TV make it so much more fun.
Well,
but you can watch golf, you can watch baseball, you can definitely, even football is better on TV, but you can watch them with the sound off and still experience the game as if you were there, because there's no one telling you what's going on when you're there.
But wouldn't it be interesting is that you could also listen to your own stories that your own personal announcer makes up in your head. See, we have a lot of history of what it all means and Tiger's place in history and what a win would mean to Sergio and all that stuff going on all the time with us. So it isn't like we don't have an announcer. We just listen to our own instead of theirs. There's a lot going on with us as we watch golf tournaments. It might be interesting to experience what's happening with us.
Now, you mean, is that why I was sobbing at the end when Tiger won?
Could be. You know? It's a very interesting, you know. I mean, in one level, what you did is that you weren't experiencing reality. You were experiencing a pixel on a plastic box. And from that, you were creating a story that touched your emotions. But it isn't like you were having an experience in nature at all. Me too. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but sometimes to see the reality of it. I mean, a lot of people think they experience nature when they see it on TV. No, you're not experiencing nature, you're experiencing the television. So, sometimes it's just to know that you can be moved by your own... See, you're a person... I mean, you could have been found out that you're a person who can be moved and inspired by human beings. You're a person who is probably moved by a person's connection with their family. And you are probably also. It's good to know that about yourself. A lot of people weren't moved by Tiger's emotion.
Wow. Well, you know, Fred, we could probably go on for a couple of hours, but in fairness to our listeners,
sure.
How about if we have you back at another time?
Sure. You bet. And for those of you who we've gotten crazy and said, well, will somebody just tell me about a grip and how can I lay up on a four par if I don't want to reach the creek? For those of you who we got crazy, we apologize and also hope that there's something in here that can be thought-provoking.
Oh, and that's the whole point of this, is that it be thought-provoking. And I think that anyone who's ever listened to this program before knows that the things that I want to talk about aren't about anybody's grip.
Cool.
So you are a very special guest, and we really appreciate you spending time with us.
Fred, thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
All righty.
Give my best to Joe.
I will.
And that's Fred Shoemaker, author of Extraordinary Golf and Extraordinary Putting. Check out his website at extraordinarygolf.com. Now, I apologize for the sound quality, but if you've made it this far, I hope you got something special out of that interview, because that was, as he said, thought-provoking. Now, Fred's manager has authorized Golf Smarter to give away 4 signed copies of his books. So I have 2 of each, 2 of Extraordinary Golf and 2 of Extraordinary Putting. And since I'd like to share the wealth as much as possible, let's have 4 winners. And instead of 4 weeks, let's do it over 2 weeks. And once again, we'll do a random drawing of the winners' names. To enter, send an email to golfsmarter@teetour.com, TEETOUR.com, with your name and your snail mail address so that we know where to send the book if you win. If you want to win the Extraordinary Golf book, put Extraordinary Golf in the subject of your email. And if you want to win the Extraordinary Putting book, then put Extraordinary Putting in the subject of your email so we can separate the ones. And if you want the full information, check out the show notes. Did you know that you can check the show notes of any podcast when you're listening to your iPod by clicking in the center button a couple times? Took me a while to figure it out, but it's a worthwhile tip. I need to ask a favor if you don't mind. Now, each week, I try to find a quote or come up with some sort of explanation of why it's better to golf smarter. Do you have a favorite golf quote that helps you play better golf? If so, why don't you share it with us? I promise to use as many as I possibly can and will definitely give you credit for it. So send your suggestions, again, to golfsmarter@ttour.com with the subject golf quote. Don't win anything on this one, but I'd like to put your name in the show and come up with something other than what I have. Lastly, hopefully you've been telling your golf buddies about Golf Smarter Podcast and the informative interviews that we provide. And if so, thank you very much. Now there's a way for you to tell the world. Postage stamps. I've designed some postage stamps, U.S. Postal Approved stamps, that you can purchase of any denomination starting at 39 cents. I thought this idea was unique, useful, and affordable. So you can order your stamps that come on sheets of 20 at Zazzle. Z-A-Z-Z-L-E. That's www.zazzle.com/Fred Green. And put an E at the end of Green, G-R-E-E-N-E. Zazzle.com/Fred Green. And let everyone know you're a golfer. And even better, let them know that you golf smarter. Thanks for listening. I'm Fred Green.